going to be some talk on today's program about getting your face tattooed as an 11-year-old. Now, don't worry. I deal with this issue very, very responsibly and in quite some detail. It's not going to be some reckless thing where I go and tell you to get a face tattoo and then you feel compelled to go and get it. No. For one thing, I have never learned the art of hypnotism. If I had, well, it's probably, is that illegal? I don't know. If I understand from all the entertainment hypnosis shows I used to watch on TV when I was in my teens and 20s, there used to always be these hypnotists and they do TV shows in front of an audience where you'd hypnotize a member of the audience and you tell them, when you wake up, you're going to feel fine, and then anytime I clap my hands, you're going to rub your belly counterclockwise with one hand while using the other hand to do whatever you normally do with your other hand when you're not in a TV audience. Maybe you use it to change the gears on your car. Maybe you use it to install a new set of gears on your car because you're an amateur mechanic. You like to fooster with these things. Now, please don't do that, by the way. If you're an amateur mechanic, don't do stuff on anything that's going to be out on the road. No. If you're into aeroplane mechanics, you wouldn't be allowed to install a new engine on a 747 that's going to be used in commercial flight. No. Just because you're a hobbyist in something, that doesn't mean you get to do it. I'm like performing brain surgery as a hobby. It doesn't mean I get to go and become a licensed surgeon and run my little clinic on Saturday afternoons from 2 to 4. No, it's not really something you can do in your spare bedroom anyway. No, I couldn't run a brain surgery clinic in, well, maybe. Maybe I could run the office part of the clinic where your customer comes in and sees you in your office and you talk about the possibilities of what you might do with their brain if you were to open up their head. But you wouldn't do the surgery in your spare bedroom. No. And even if you did, you wouldn't call it your spare bedroom. You wouldn't even call it your spare operating theatre. No, you would just call it your operating theatre. You won't want people thinking it's a spare one, because then they'd say, why am I not getting the actual operating theatre? This is just a backup, is it? No, I don't like that. I don't like that. Just as I wouldn't like if I was listening to a podcast and they kept telling me, I'm doing this in my spare bedroom. I'd be thinking, why aren't you doing it in your proper main bedroom, your master bedroom? Well, in this podcast, you have the best of both worlds, because while this technically is a spare bedroom in that it's not normally in use as a bedroom, except for guests, it is the master bedroom of this house. So it's the spare bedroom and it's the master bedroom. So that's the best of both worlds. I think I'm being very respectful to you that is doing it this way. Now, it isn't solely used as a podcasting room. It's used for other things. It's used for storage. It's used for additional wardrobe space. There is a bed in here. There is some exercise equipment. There are some cat beds. I wouldn't do surgery in here. No, I don't think it would be sanitary. There's that toilet in there. I'm the only one who uses that. I don't keep it particularly clean. So I'd know. And then I brush my teeth in there and I usually miss. I don't mean I miss my face. Although that has happened. I go and brush my teeth in there. I get a cup of water and I mix the toothpaste into that. I like to blend it in before I use it. And then I dip my toothbrush in that. And then I jam that into my mouth and I brush it a bit. And there's going to be stuff flying, spit flying from that all over the face. Now, it's going to be quite clean spit because it's mixed with toothpaste, which I presume makes it nice and clean. Kills any of the germs, just as it would if you were mixing your piss with bleach. You wouldn't mix your spit with bleach because that would be happening inside your mouth. You wouldn't want that. Toothpaste for your inner mouth is even better than bleach. Bleach is something you get when you want to make stuff white and cover up the shit stains and stuff. Most toothpaste is not whitening. You're using it to clean yourself. You're not looking at it to cover up all the mess in your mouth with bleach and wipe it out. No, you're doing a proper cleaning job. You're cleaning it, not just covering up. So when you're using toothpaste, I would argue that's a far more serious deep clean of your mouth than the equivalent of cleaning your toilet with bleach. Don't clean your toilet with bleach. That's not cleaning. That's covering it up. That's painting it. It's like whitewashing your fence every year, like in that Huckleberry Finn Tom Sawyer story by Mark Twain. There is a story that starts with Tom Sawyer whitewashing his fence. His mother has made him whitewash his fence. One of those old picket fences. They whitewash it every year. I think whitewash is white paint. I assume it is. You're not washing it. You're painting over the dirt. And that's what you do when you bleach your toilet. So you don't want to be doing that to your mouth. Not least because you don't put bleach into your mouth. That's dangerous. Well, you wouldn't if there was some sort of edible bleach that you could put over your mouth. That wouldn't be cleaning. That would be covering up the stains. You don't want to do that. You want to clean the stains. You want to scrub your mouth. Like you'd scrub a toilet if you were a proper householder. You'd scrub your toilet. You'd clean it properly. That's what you do with your mouth. If you're listening to this while getting a tattoo, or perhaps you're getting a piercing of some kind, or perhaps a combination of the two, tattooing involves piercing your skin with something sharp, doesn't it? I think so. I have two tattoos. I've been pierced with a tattoo gun hundreds of times within the space of 4 hours along my arm. Some fella came along and he said, "Right, it's your turn to get tattooed. You sit down there, I'm going to draw a cat on your forearm as requested." It's not a domestic cat, it's a panther. It was close enough to being a cat. Close enough for me. Not the pink panther, a proper panther with a snake wrapped around it. A traditional tribal tattoo. I'm from the tribe known as cat owners. I know it's not officially a tribe. It's not something where we have meetings for the whole cat-owning community. We can't. There's billions of us. There's literally billions of cat owners on the planet. Billions of them. Billions and billions and billions. Now, of course, legally, if you were to try to define that, you'd say a lot of countries have laws where you can't own a cat. So a lot of those people officially are not cat owners. Possibly myself included. I don't know if there's anything in the law here that says you're officially the owner of a cat. If you have a cat in your house, if there is, I've been the owner of at least 20, 25 cats in my adult life. I've owned them. The only ones that you're just, I don't know, if you rescue one and then just keep it for a while and then find an owner, are you an owner? I suppose if you don't own a cat, you're a custodian of a cat. You're like a fella who runs a museum or a gallery. You're the custodian. You don't own any of that shit. You don't own the Mona Lisa. You don't own the Book of Kells. You just look after it, or you tell people about it. People come into your establishment, your gallery or your theatre, and you say, "Hello, welcome. Here's a picture of the Mona Lisa." She was this woman who liked having her photo taken. Photographs weren't very advanced in those days. In those days, if you wanted your photograph taken, you had to go and sit down in front of this fella. The photographer wouldn't have any electronic equipment. It wasn't invented yet. And so he had a kind of an easel. He put the paper on that, or the canvas. What's canvas? I don't know what canvas is. They used to use it. They still use it sometimes. They use canvas instead of paper, because paper's not fancy enough for them. And we get this canvas stuff. It's like what your school bag would be made out of. Now, I remember canvas school bags as a child. They were terrible. They were the worst possible type of school bag you could get. Maybe you got it to look cool, or you wanted to look like you're in the army or something. Why would the army use a canvas school bag? I don't know. I used to get my canvas school bags from the army surplus shop in Bray, County Wicklow. They had an army surplus shop down a laneway somewhere near the train station. I wasn't really in a shopping district. There was this weird little lane, an army surplus shop, a very nice Chinese takeaway, and a couple of other weird charity shops and things. I don't know how any of them survived. That was just a shortcut you took to get from the train station to that road that you walk along to get home. It wasn't in the town or anything. It was out of most people's way. I don't know why anyone would go down there other than to get home. I had canvas school bags. You go out with your canvas school bag, the first thing that would happen is it would rain and your canvas school bag would get soaked. Everything inside it would get soaked. Why in the name of Christ would you use that as a school bag? I don't know. I have no way of asking my teenage self why I thought that was a good idea. At one point I had a leather school bag. That's nearly like having a briefcase. If you go into school with one of these, you're going to get mopped to death. There was one kid who had an actual briefcase as his school bag. And I remember as a younger child, I'd see one of them as a very young child in the early school days. I'd see some kid with a briefcase type thing. I thought, I want that. And thankfully, nobody got one of them for me. By the time you're about 12 or 13, you realise, no, I don't want to be seen with that. No. And hopefully by then, neither of your parents have succumbed to your request. You wouldn't make a demand for a school bag like that. For a briefcase style school bag, you wouldn't demand that from your parents, because if you're the type of kid who uses a briefcase, you'd probably be rather meek. Or are you? You know, maybe not, maybe not. I suppose if you haven't got that type of briefcase by the time you're 12 and you've been wanting it since you were about 6, then you're meek. A kid who wants a briefcase isn't necessarily automatically meek. No, they might be quite the opposite. They might be thinking, I don't give a shit what people think. I'm going to go into school with a briefcase and 10 years from now I'm going to be a gazillionaire. Because people are going to stop me in the street and say, hello, you, would you like to start a business with me? Because you look very businesslike. You got the little suitcase there. What's in the suitcase? In a world, in an alternative universe where these things aren't something to be mocked, it would make perfect sense. You're usually putting a rectangular cuboid lunchbox in there. You're putting these books. None of them are round things or oval shaped things. They're straight things with right angles. Putting them in a briefcase would make perfect sense, unless they're too wide, in which case that's a problem. So your traditional stretchy backpack style school bag would be more appropriate for that, because you can cram stuff into it. But if you don't need to cram stuff into it and you're confident that everything you own, maybe you've measured everything you own, that's what you can do with square things and rectangular things like books and lunchboxes. You can measure them, figure out how much space you're going to take. You can turn it into a maths lesson. Tell all the kids, we're all into briefcases now. In fact, they're compulsory. Make them compulsory for at least 10 years, just for once in our life. Let the kids who want to have a briefcase school bag feel like they're lost outcasts, because they're not. It's like an accident of birth. The fashions went to the briefcase style school bags or something to be mocked. It could very easily have gone the other way, just as drainpipe trousers come and go out of fashion. There's no reason a briefcase style school bag couldn't come in and out of fashion. Especially nowadays when all these kids have tablets and laptops, it would somewhat make sense. Now, ideally, it should be adapted to make it more secure. You don't want to be carrying this in your hand. It has got laptops and things in it. Turn it into a backpack briefcase, or put a strap on it, or strap it to your wrist, like you do if you're delivering or collecting money from a bank in a security van. They used to do that at a local bank where I lived. This van used to turn up outside the bank. Loads of people would hop out. If you were walking along the footpath, you'd be diverted out onto the road. They said, no, this footpath is now for money. Yield to this cash. They usually yield to pedestrians when you're crossing a footpath. Well, no, you had these fellas standing there with guns and you're expected to just either stand there and wait or cross the road. I used to just stand there looking very annoyed. You make all your money out of paper. No wonder you have to carry it in a fireproof security van. Stop making it out of paper. Make it out of something more secure and stable. Like a precious metal. I like you do with the coins. Coins make sense. Get rid of all these notes and replace them all with coins. The higher the value, the more appropriate it is for it to be made out of metal. If right was right, lower denomination cash would be made out of paper and the higher denominations will be made out of bronze or copper or whatever you make coins out of. This paper is just crap. A 1 cent coin should be made out of tissue paper. A 5 cent or 10 cent coin should be made out of very flimsy greaseproof paper, something like that. A 1 euro note should be literally a note. It should be made out of the type of paper you use in your printer. Now, obviously, you'd have security features on that. But the security features they put on banknotes wouldn't be necessary if those things were coins. Make out of a proper coin that can't be easily broken or torn or turned into something. They used to use bus tickets in the 1990s, train tickets. They got a monthly commuter ticket. You got this thing, it was a little rectangular credit card sized card. The middle layer wasn't paper. The middle layer was very tough plastic. It was in between the two layers of paper, so you couldn't tear this thing up. You couldn't tear up this train ticket. When it was finished, you scrunched it up and then you put it in the bin, or else you cut it up like you would a credit card. But though, it couldn't easily get damaged because it had to last at least a month. It'd be putting about 100 machines at least over the course of a month. It would not be damaged easily. Make the banknotes out of that, but only use them for lower denominations. The 100 euros and the 50 euros and perhaps the 20 euros, they should be made out of metal. Now, maybe not round little metal coins. It's very hard to count. No, make the rectangular coins. There's no reason you can't have rectangular coins that are as flat as a paper banknote. Or perhaps make them like those train tickets, make it two layers of paper. And then in the middle layer, instead of this tough layer of plastic that was in the middle of those train tickets, a layer of metal. And I don't mean just little bits of threads of metal in the watermark, whatever they have in there. They have some sort of a watermark and a little strip of tin foil or something. That's supposedly a security feature. No, make the whole thing a whole rectangular banknote-sized coin. And then put paper on the front and back of that, a layer of paper on that, like wallpaper, if you must. Maybe you wanted to look nice. People think these paper notes look nice. You put a picture of some historic figure on it. Some historic figure who usually has never even seen that banknote because it wasn't around in his time. You don't get put on a banknote until long after you're dead, usually. Unless you're the monarch, if you're a monarch of Britain or somewhere, they'll put you on the banknotes almost immediately after you're installed. It takes a year or two, I believe, then they start putting you on these banknotes. I haven't seen a British banknote since they put the new king in. I just realised, I wonder if they start at you. I bet here it takes a year or two, so there's people going around still with the dead queen on a thing, and you probably think, oh, I'll keep this as a memento so I can remember the dead queen after they start putting this fella on it. He's only been waiting to become king for about 50 years, so it's taking a while. It was very sudden, so you haven't got around to changing all the banknotes out yet. I suppose you have to go around to every house and business in the country and say, hello, I'm from the central bank. I'm here to collect your old Queen banknotes, not the ones with Freddie Mercury on them. No, that's not real money, but the ones with the Queen on them. She's dead. So give me all of those now, and I'll give you ones with the new fella on it, King Charles. No, it's not a dog. I wonder, they issue all these postage stamps in countries like that, and countries like mine, where we don't have a monarch. When we issue all these collectible postage stamps to put wildlife and artworks and famous people's faces on them and animals, I wonder, has there ever been any with a King Charles dog on it, on a stamp, on a special collectible stamp? Because if it, that's going to cause confusion, because they put the monarch on their normal non-collectible stamps. So someone's going to say, I've got a King Charles stamp for sale. You better damn well stipulate, is that the one that's just a normal postage stamp that you want on a letter nowadays has got the monarch on it? Or is it an old collectible one from the rare dog breed or non-rare dog breeds collection? I hope they at least look different. That's going to be embarrassing if they don't. What's a King Charles dog? Is it one of those things with floppy ears? It's kind of white and brown. Looks a bit like a toy dog, but it's not really. Looks a bit grumpy. I think so. I think that's a King Charles. Looks a bit like a toy dog. I had a toy dog as a child that was made out of, I think it was wooden. It might have had wheels on it. It was shaped like a dog, but instead of, yes, that's right. Instead of feet, it had wheels. And it had these delicious looking ears, these very flat brown ears. There was a brown and white dog. It had flat, delicious looking ears. They're kind of the shape of a tongue, like a bar of chocolate, slightly less square. They were flat against the wooden dog. And I'm thinking about it now, my mouth is watering. I had that Thai dog as a child. I think I also had a stuffed Thai dog. That didn't do anything for my appetite, no. I have photos of myself with that stuffed dog and a teddy bear. I think I convinced myself, perhaps, that the dog belonged to the teddy bear. That a bear would have a pet dog. This is obviously ridiculous. I don't think I counted that wooden Thai dog among my soft Thai family. I consider them a separate separate branch of my household. I think I thought of the wooden Thai dog more as being part of my toy vehicles and Lego and toys like that. It wasn't one of my soft toys that you bring around with you for company. No.
Into your head.
Anyway, you're sitting in a tattoo parlor. You're having your tattoo done. You're being stabbed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times through the skin. And these, I'm not exactly sure how tattooing works, even though I've been quite extensively tattooed on one forearm and quite non-extensively on one upper shoulder. I don't really understand how tattooing works. They stab you and somehow that puts ink on you. I don't know. Maybe is it like the nib of a boy road, which is needle sharp, like a needle but has ink inside it? I suppose it must be like that. They're stabbing you for some reason and then the ink comes out through that. When you're using a pen or a boy road to write, you don't stab the paper with it, do you? No. If you did, you'd expect the paper to burst open, leave marks everywhere, become illegible. Anyway, you're having your tattoo done, being stabbed repeatedly in the skin. Does it go into the flesh? I'm not sure. It must go somewhere. How does that work? They're putting ink on you and that's going to stay on you for the rest of your life. Are they putting it on your bones? If they're engraving that on your bones, that would justify the amount of pain you experience. And would also make more sense, because it doesn't make sense to me. You're putting ink on your skin and that's going to be there forever. Layers and layers of skin can peel off and the ink will still be there. I don't know. Are they writing it into the flesh? But flesh is just fat. Surely to God you use up the fat sometimes, or you put on fat and then you lose some. It comes and goes. So you still have your tattoo there. That doesn't make any sense. I think tattoos might be witchcraft. It would certainly make sense as to why for so many hundreds of years. Wait a minute. Is it true to say that for hundreds of years people thought tattoos were evil? Maybe it's not. Maybe that's overstating it. Because I do remember when I was younger, tattoos were considered far more controversial. If you got a tattoo, you were evil. You were out of control. You're destroying yourself. You're vandalizing yourself for the ages. You get reincarnated, there's going to be a scar on your skin. Wherever you had a tattoo, there's still going to be a scar there. If you were 7 or 8 years of age when I was a child, well, if you were 7 or 8 years of age when I was 7 or 8 years of age, not if you were 7 or 8 years of age when I was 14 or 15 years of age. So when I was 7 or 8 years of age, if you asked your parents for a tattoo, obviously they wouldn't grant it because they'd be afraid to get in trouble. You're probably not supposed to get your child tattooed. Well, in those days, if you asked for a tattoo from your parents, they'd get very, 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 very worried about you. They said, "That fella wants a tattoo. We have to keep him under permanent protection, keep him locked up, put him on house arrest." They didn't have ankle bracelets in those days, so they couldn't electronically rein you in, so they had to put you under a, what's that thing where they tell you you can't stay out after a certain time at night? What's that called? Although that would make no sense, because tattoo parlors are open during the day. They're not like nightclubs. They're open during the day, 9 to 5 or something like that. So they couldn't say, "Oh, you're not allowed out after 8 p.m. in case you get a tattoo." No. They'd have to keep you in during the day, during office hours. They'd say, "You're not allowed out during office hours." Well, except to go to school, I suppose. And that would be a problem. Maybe they'd take you out of school for a while. I'm sure the school would understand. They'd tell the school, "Hello, we're a bit concerned that our child might be wanting to get a tattoo and we're not entirely sure we can stop him or her." So we're going to not send him to school for the next couple of weeks, just for his protection. I'm sure you'll agree this is far more important than his ongoing education. He can be educated any time and go back and get your education any time. You won't be around for 90, 100 years, the next generation. They're all going to live forever. So there's no hurry. There's adult education. There's online education. You can just come back and you can afford to miss a couple of weeks so you don't end up with some tattoo that's going to destroy you for life. You go and apply for your first job and you tell them, I've got a tattoo. Or if we don't tell them you've got a tattoo, you've got a tattoo so they see it because it's on your face. People get judgmental about that. Employers do, some of them anyway. So they say, oh, we're not going to employ that fella. But if you go in and you don't have a tattoo, but you have less education on your curriculum vitae because your parents were responsible enough to keep you away from school for a couple of weeks when you were 7 or 8, when you were threatening to get a tattoo, that's not going to affect your job application as much because it's not going to be a thing on the CV, say. They're not going to say, oh, I see there's a gap in your education when you were 7.5 years of age. You missed 2 years of school. Can you tell me about that? No, easy to cover that up in your CV. You can just make it non-obvious. Just say you're in primary school from age 4 to age 12 and don't go into any detail. I don't think they delve into your primary school education anyway. Unless you never went to secondary school, in which case, well, then your parents have broken the law. They're supposed to keep you in school until you're 16 or something, aren't they? Unless you were like a Doogie Howser type. By the time you were 9, you had your degree. Although I think they still have to keep you in school till you're 16. You would have your degree at 11, become a Doogie Howser type. Do young people know who Doogie Howser is? He's not anyone. He's a fictional character in a sitcom from the 90s about this teenage kid who's a genius. He works in a hospital as a doctor and he's about 15. He got his degree when he was about 12. That sort of nonsense. So I suppose if you're a Doogie Howser type, you get all your education done, you get your master's degree by the age of 11, but it's still the law that you have to be in education, in school until you're 16. So how does that work? I don't know. Maybe there's some loophole for people like him. I don't know. Doogie Howser in this country, he'd go to apply for his first job and they say, oh, you left school at 11 years of age. What's that about? And you'll say, well, in actual fact, I left school at 7. Then I went to university and got my primary degree and my PhD. I have a doctorate in brain surgery and rocket science. So I was able to finish my full-time education at the age of 11. Hence the gap in my CV from age 11 to age 16, because it's illegal to employ a child like that in a hospital or anything. My chosen profession, unfortunately, was medicine, and they don't employ children in medicine. So you had to hang around till I was 16 and do nothing. And of course, the interviewer will say to that, they'll say, well, why didn't you go work in some manual job while you were waiting for your 16th birthday to come along? Are you afraid of hard work? Is that it? You just sat there watching television for your whole teenage years. And of course, you'll say to that, well, my parents thought part of having a degree by the age of 11 meant I was in danger of missing out a lot of my childhood because I spent much of it in university until the age of 11 when I graduated. So my parents decided that from the age of 11 to the age of 16, when I would become old enough to apply for a job as a doctor, I would spend those years catching up on normal child stuff like watching television, playing football, playing video games, trying to figure out how women work, experimenting with drugs or threatening to experiment with drugs. Oh, and getting tattoos. I got a tattoo when I was 12, as you can see. It's on my face. Unfortunately, when I was 12, I'd already graduated from university. So when I was threatening to get a tattoo, they couldn't say, oh, we're going to stop you going to school. No, I wasn't in school anymore. So they didn't have that to hold over me. So they just had to let me out. They just had to let me. It's like having a cat who you got from somewhere else to as a kitten. They were allowed to go out. So you have to let this cat out. You have to open the window and just hope it doesn't get into trouble at night. Hope that when it goes out at night, it isn't going around illegally murdering other animals. So there was nothing they could do about it. And of course, the interviewer will say, do you have cats yourself, Doogie? And Doogie will say, no, I don't have cats. I'm a 16-year-old child. Plenty of time for having cats when I'm about 60. And I won't have time then, of course, because I'm a high flyer. I'll probably be a deity by then. If I'm Doogie Howser, the doctor, by age 16, assuming I get this job, then by the age of 60, I'm going to be a god or something, I assume. So I'm not going to be interested in getting a cat then. I'll be creating new species as a supreme deity by then. Maybe I'll create a new type of cat. Maybe that's what I'll do. I'll create a new type of cat. And they'll say, well, what about God then? Are you going to overrule all the species? You're going to say, oh God, you didn't make cats good enough. We're going to make a new version of the cat. That seems a little bit arrogant. And of course, the Doogie Howser kid will say to that, he'll say, well, a life like this does make you arrogant. I'm not arrogant yet. I'm saying that by the time I retire in my 60s, I'll become arrogant. That won't affect you as my employer, because this is all going to happen after I retire. And of course, the interviewer will say, oh, I see, I see. I see, I see, I see, I see, I see. And what about the face tattoo? What's that? And the Doogie Howser type will say, well, it's a panther. And they'll say, isn't that a type of cat? And he'll say, oh, I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest. It's a tribal tattoo. It's a panther with a snake wrapped around it. And the tattoo itself is wrapped around my head. You can't see it, but it extends all the way around the back of my head, under my hair, and comes out the other side. I can cover that up by wearing hair, of course, by growing hair on it. But the front of my face, no, that's the front-facing part of it. It's like an iceberg. The tattoo in my face is just a small part of the whole tattoo that goes all the way around my head. It's like the tip of an iceberg. Is that going to affect my position here? I hope you don't discriminate against stuff like that. Because it was done with a needle, just like a medical procedure. The whole tattooing procedure is very like a medical procedure. They stab you in. It's just like when we all went for our COVID vaccines. You went into some place and you rolled up your sleeve and they stabbed you with this needle thing. It just didn't leave a permanent mark like the tattoo procedure. So a tattoo procedure is a lot more serious than a little medical procedure like that. Of course, if you're having that problem where you're 16 years of age and you're applying for jobs in medicine because you're Doogie Howser and you start having trouble whereby the interviewers insist on asking you about your face tattoo, well, you could just, you know, you don't have to go into medicine. You could go and choose another career. It's not compulsory to go into medicine, you know. You go and find some other career. You're clearly very intelligent. You could retrain, find another path through life. You could become a tattoo artist. Now, the only time when that's going to be a problem is if you go for your tattoo artist interview and the interviewer says, now, that tattoo that's on your face, is that an example of your style of artwork? And you have to explain to them and you say, no, I didn't do this. This isn't my handiwork. Oh, Christ, no, I would do it much better than this. Unfortunately, I couldn't tattoo myself. No, yourself. When you look at yourself in the mirror, you're completely different than what you look like in real life. At least I assume so. We all assume so. We all assume that what you look like in the mirror is very different to what you look like in real life. Because the mirror is a topsy-turvy, inside out, upside down, non-representation of real life. It's like looking at a cartoon of yourself. You look at yourself in the mirror and you're just, that's just not you. You can just ignore that. Just ignore that. Look, if you see yourself in the mirror and you don't like what you see, that's not you. Don't worry about it. Just a cartoon. The problem with that is if you're a talented tattoo artist and you want your face tattooed, you can't do that yourself. That's just not going to work out. Even if you try to do the thing where you use a camera, you have a screen in front of yourself, you try and do it while looking at your face on the camera, that's not going to work because your whole life you've been practicing doing stuff in the mirror, combing your hair, shaving, brushing your teeth, you do all that in the mirror. And even though your face in the mirror is not an accurate representation, it's conditioned into you now to do stuff in the mirror. So doing stuff into the camera is just going to feel wrong and you're not going to be able to do it. It's going to be like writing with your other hand if you're not ambidextrous. So no, that's going to be a problem. So no, if you want a face tattoo and you want to be a tattoo artist, you're far better off not doing that. Because people are going to look at your face and they're going to say, oh, if that's what your tattooing is like, no, thank you. Or else they look at your face. If you get a particularly good face tattoo from someone who's more talented than you, which is perfectly possible. Not everyone who goes into tattoo artistry is the greatest in the world. Some are just moderately good. There's nothing wrong with them. It's just they're not the best in the world. So you're a tattoo artist. You've had your tattoo done in your face by someone who's a far better, more accomplished artist than you, and it looks great. People are going to look at that. Your customers will see your face and say, oh, that looks good. These people have the very good tattoo artist. I'm going to get my face done by him. And then they get you to do their tattoo and then they realize it looks nothing like the tattoo you have on your face because you didn't do the one on your face, and they're going to be annoyed. I say, excuse me, you've missold me a facial tattoo. I looked at your face, which I assume is an advertisement for your portfolio. I thought, oh, I'll get one like that. Now my face doesn't look anything like that. And they say, well, for one thing, I didn't tattoo my face because although I'm a complete idiot who gets my face tattooed, I'm not as much a complete idiot as a person who tattoos their own face, because that's far, far, far worse. If you're stupid enough to get your face tattooed, but not stupid enough to tattoo your own face, then I think you should get some credit for that. Well, no, that's going to be a problem with your customers. So no, better off not to get a face tattoo if you're going to be a tattoo artist. Or else get a face tattoo and be sure to tell all your customers, I didn't do this face tattoo. In fact, I don't do face tattoos at all. I think they're irresponsible. And whoever did this to me, I disapprove of them. I wouldn't have gone to them if I'd known they were going to tattoo my face. So let this be a warning and make it your brand that you're a very professional tattoo artist. You wouldn't do stuff like that. You say, I would never tattoo my face. I don't believe in face tattoos, so don't look at my face and think I did that or I approve of it. No, I don't approve. I got this face tattoo when I was 7 or 8. I wasn't yet responsible until you're 22 or 23. If you're a male, your frontal cortex isn't fully developed. So don't judge me on the tattoo I got on my face when I was 7 or 8. My parents couldn't control me. Oh, well, wait, I didn't get it when I was... I wanted to get it when I was 7 or 8. I had it designed when I was 7 or 8, but I didn't get it until I was around 11, just when I had finished my PhD in medicine. Then I got my face tattooed because my parents couldn't keep me in at school because I was finished school. They couldn't say, I'll keep you out of school and lock you up in the room so you don't go and get a tattoo. Oh, the way, how does that work? They couldn't keep me at home because I wasn't in school anymore. Surely they could have kept me at home anyway. I say, I know you don't have a school to go to, so we're not keeping you out of school, but we're keeping you at home anyway so you don't get a tattoo. Surely they could have done that. I don't know. Maybe they thought because I had a PhD in medicine that I couldn't be controlled like a normal child. But it sounds like they didn't even try, doesn't it? Anyway, suffice to say, I have a face tattoo, but I'm not a face tattoo artist, and I'm against face tattoos, so don't ask me for a face tattoo. That's how you handle that. Hopefully that'll work out for you. You knew it wasn't going to be simple, and you got your face tattoo. Well, you didn't, because you got it when you were 11 years of age, but you knew as you got on with your career and tried to get into your career in medicine at 16 and not to explain your face tattoo to potential employers, you knew that was going to be a problem, didn't you? So don't be too surprised, but not to worry. If you can get a PhD by the age of 11, you can get a new career at 16, become a tattoo artist. If you were that creative a person, why would you go into medicine? Well, maybe you wanted to be a plastic surgeon, I suppose. Not the type who does people who just want to look nice. No, the type who fixes people's faces. The type who turns the elephant man into something presentable. That sort of plastic surgeon, that's something to be lauded. I don't know if you call that creative. Maybe not. No, because you're not creating a new face for the elephant man. He's trying to create the face that he should have, that he would have had if something hadn't gone wrong with his cell growth. Well, it's not like you're creating a new face look for him. No, you're saying, here's, I've figured out what your face is supposed to look like, and I'll try and install that over your current, whatever the hell that is, that head of yours, elephant man. Where did you get that head from? It's awful looking. Awful looking. Now, I mightn't feel the same way about that if it was an elephant. I don't know. Do elephants look at each other and think, oh Christ, look at him. He's got that trunk in the middle of his face. I suppose it's better than a tattoo. And then he's got this other thing coming out of his arse that's like a trunk, but it's sealed up at the end. I don't think it's hollow. Her tail's hollow. I don't know. Either way, there isn't an opening at the end of a tail, even if it is hollow. So it's not like you can suck through it like a straw. No. Well, why would you want to? I presume there are countries where people eat elephant meat. If they do that, I wonder, do they leave the trunk on sometimes and encourage people to suck through it as some sort of power heating? I don't know. Some people like to have a suckling pig and they put the whole pig on the plate in the middle of the table or something, which is kind of gross. But I wonder, are there people who do that with an elephant? Because then you could do something with the trunk. Do something inventive with the trunk. Turn it into a straw or something like that. I don't know. Do elephants have umbilical cord? If you're an elephant and you're being born, you have a tail at one end and a trunk at the other end, and then an umbilical cord somewhere coming out of your stomach. That's a lot of long things. You have your four legs, you have your trunk, you have your tail, and then you have, well, whatever other accoutrements a male elephant has for a start. And then you have your umbilical cord. I suppose you cut that off. Which end do you cut it off at? I don't know how umbilical cords work. You cut it off at the mother's end or at the child's end. I've no idea. I've no idea. I've no involvement in that sort of thing. I don't understand how you have a belly button that doesn't have a big inch or two of a stub sticking out of it. Because when you cut down a big old tree in your garden, there's a stump left. You can't just cut away the whole thing and leave nothing. It doesn't work like that. There's a stump left. It's got roots in it. I think what they do is cut grooves in it and then you put poison in it and it rots over the course of a few years. We did that in our front garden once when I was a child. But no, an umbilical cord. I don't know. Maybe it's easier to get rid of than that, I suppose. I suppose the fair way to do it would be to cut the umbilical cord exactly in half. So the mother has to deal with one half of it and you have to deal with the other. If you want to hold on to it, you can. In fact, everyone should hold on to their umbilical cord. Keep it attached to their belly button until they're 18 or 21 preferably, and then they can make their own choices. Just like you should be able to make your own choices regarding that thing they do to male foreskins. You don't get that chopped off as a child. No. Well, let people decide that when they become an adult. And the same should be true of your belly button. I know people don't think much about their belly buttons, but they might if they had the choice. You could make an artistic, cosmetic choice about what you want to look like when you're 21. Do you want to hold on to this umbilical cord? I presume it would continue to live. Not rot or anything. If it'd be far better than cutting it off and then either putting it in a medical waste disposal or putting it in a freezer to be eaten on your 6th birthday or whatever they do. I think that would be far better anyway.
Once upon a time, there was a dog. A dog.
Basically a
dog.
And this dog, he was walking along the road one day, minding his own business, on his way to the local kennels. He was on his way to the local kennels because he thought he lived there. He'd been spending some time there because his owners had put him in there a few times while they were away on trips. And because of that, he thought he lived there. I don't know why he thought that. They used to bring him there in the car, put him there, and then come and collect him in the car. So it's not like he knew the walking route to the kennels. So why he thought that, I don't know. I don't think this story makes any sense. Well, that's not for me to judge.
Just because something doesn't make sense, that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I remember when I was about 17 or 18 or something like that. I think it came on the radio one day that they'd cloned a sheep. And that didn't make any sense to me. I found it alarming. It sounded like something from a science fiction movie. But they said, we've cloned a sheep. And I thought that doesn't make any sense. But I was listening to her on BBC Radio 4, which at the time was considered a very serious, intelligent talk outlet. You could rely on something from this. You could listen to the morning news program. It'd be presented by men in suits and women in suits, serious adults. Not like listening to Joe Rogan or me. Wasn't like listening to some pop music on Spotify. Wasn't like listening to a recorded stand-up special. Wasn't like listening to the greatest hits of Queen, not the original one, Greatest Hits 3, which came out posthumously when they'd already put most of their hits onto Greatest Hits compilations and they were scraping the barrel. They put all this stuff where they did a live thing with George Michael singing and all this other nonsense. It's not like listening to that. It's not like listening to your cat meowing and then interpreting that as your cat saying something intelligent. What's the word? Anthropomorphizing. Is it anthropomorphizing or I won't stop trying to pronounce that. I'm about to edit out that bit where I try to pronounce anthropomorphizing because I don't even know for sure what word I'm trying to pronounce. I know the word, but I can't remember whether it has three syllables or four. Am I adding an extra syllable into it? It's probably one of those things where it has an extra syllable here, and you Americans do it with one fewer syllables. You do that with a lot of the big words. But then, of course, he'll talk about public transport. He'll call it public transportation. It's like calling a bus an omnibus mobile. Don't do that. If you're interested in omnibus mobiles, you don't want to drive one or travel in one. You just like the word omnibus. Because I like this, quite an interesting word. I like that word omnibus. Except when it's associated with stupid soap operas on the television here. They always have these omnibus editions of the weekend that go on all afternoon and they're boring as shit. I know if you're into the word omnibus and the concept of an omnibus in general, Volume 9 of the Into Your Head Shorts Omnibus is available on YouTube. Go to intoyourhead.ie/videos. You can find it there or find links to subscribe to the YouTube thing. Don't worry, it's not a thing you pay for. No, it's a YouTube channel. You subscribe to that and get it all on your thing and you say, oh, look, this is an intelligent looking thing. I'm not into shorts. You're thinking, I'm too intellectual for short form videos. Well, this fellow does an omnibus edition every couple of months. He puts out this omnibus thing. He puts all his comedic shorts, which are basically just ads for the podcast. He strings them all together into an omnibus mobile and then he puts them up and it's great. You can just pretend it's a long form video and watch that or put it on the background as background noise or just share it. Just share it. You don't have to watch it or listen to it at all. Just share it. Share that shit. For Christ's sake, it's been 20 years now. You've never shared anything from this podcast. Or have you? Maybe I'm misjudging you. Have you shared anything from this podcast recently? You go onto some social media and go, oh, there's that fella with his thing. I'm going to share his thing. This is nonsense. Anyway, that's omnibus mobiles. So you Americans, you say, public transportation. You say, we're having a public transportation initiative. And then you all go and get in your cars and you drive somewhere down your highways that go on forever. I've been on highways in America. They're great. They're absolutely fucking fantastic. You get into a car, you get into the passenger seat because I can't drive. And then your sibling or your wife gets into the passenger seat and then you drive somewhere. And then depending on which one you're with, you stop at a very nice drive-thru or else you don't. You put a CD on the radio. They have these special music compilations just for driving. I say this is for road trips. It's not for listening to at home in bed. It's not for just enjoying while you're sitting on your sofa with your stereo on. It's making sure to sit exactly halfway between your surround sound speakers, listening to the music. Don't look up the lyrics while you're doing it. No, you're full and undivided attention. So you wouldn't go into a cinema and then start reading a book, a review about the film while it's on. No, for one thing, everyone will get angry at you to say that fella's reading his phone. Really annoying. Sitting right behind this fella in the cinema. He's got his phone on. I think he's reading a review of this movie. And of course, they'll be mistaken because you're not reading a review. You're reading a preview. You're probably the first one to see it. But you're reading the preview because you're very excited. There are no reviews available yet because no one else has seen it. Maybe you're a film reviewer. I don't know. Either way, you will have to find a way to read that off paper and not your screen. Now, of course, that's ableist. If you told me that if I was in the cinema reading something off my phone and you tapped me on my shoulder and said, no, you can't be reading stuff off an illuminated screen in here. It's a distraction to everyone. It's extremely annoying. Well, I'd have to say to that, I'd say, excuse me, I can't read print or written word. I can't read anything off a piece of paper that's not backlit. In fact, it has to be in dark mode on a screen on a black background. If you give me something to read on paper, I have to point my app on it and put it onto my screen. Now, in my defense, when I'm reading stuff in dark mode, the screen is a lot less bright than it is when you read something that's on a white background. If you're reading something on a white background, if you have it turned up bright enough, you can use that to find your way around the dark cinema without even putting on the flashlight. Or you could have the screen on glaring white background, turn the brightness up, and have your flashlight on. That's like having a flashlight that has a light at both ends. About as useful as having a cigarette that's lit at both ends. Is that useful? Maybe it is. If you could design a cigarette, some sort of a fuse that connects one end of the cigarette to the other, so that when you light one end, the other end automatically comes alight as well, and then you can't smoke it, that would help you give up smoking, I assume. I assume the only way you could smoke that would be to break it open in the middle, and then smoke it from the middle out. Maybe they could make some way that when you cut it open, the two new ends go alight as well. I suppose that would only work as a deterrent if you bought it. You would just stop buying that. You'd probably find some underground cigarette supplier that still sells cigarettes that actually work. It would be like when you Americans tried to ban alcohol and then you had your speakeasies. You said, we're going to ban alcohol. We're going to go to this speakeasy. There's nothing to do with speaking at all. I don't know why you call it that. You give things really sensible names sometimes, but then you call this thing a speakeasy. It's not a speakeasy. It's a drinkeasy. Although how easy is it if you have to go underground in the basement somewhere? If a cop comes to the door in a speakeasy, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to look them up and down and decide whether or not to let them in. And then if you decide not to let them in, you're expecting them to just go away. You say, no, I'm sorry, you can't come in. I'm not accusing you of being a cop. I'm just covering my arse in case you are, so you can't come in. Is the cop supposed to go, oh, that's fine, I'll go away, so not bother you again? What they'll probably do is come back wearing a disguise. They'll wear one of those disguises that kids used to like to wear in the 1980s. There was a pair of glasses frames with a mustache and the nose attached to it. You put that on over your face, make sure it's the right way up, and then just look at people through it and they say, oh, that's not the cop, that's another fella. Then you have to ask him the same questions. You say, are you a cop? And they'll say, would a cop look like this? Would a cop be wearing glasses and a plasticky looking extra large nose and a mustache that seems to be hanging down from the nose? Looks more like nostril hair. It probably does, does it? Maybe that's why those things looked rather comical. Those disguises we used to wear when we were kids, the glasses and plastic nose and fake mustache attached to it. That was all attached together, so the mustache looked like it was just a big bunch of nostril hair hanging down between your mouth and your nose. What's the difference between that and an actual mustache? I suppose the difference is you have to put kind of a gap between your mustache and your nose, because for one thing, it'll tickle you if you don't. And for another thing, it'll look like it's just nostril hair. It'll look like a nostril hair comb over for your mustache palette, for your mustachial area. which is kind of unnecessary because it's not compulsory to have a mustache. There's no need to be having a comb over. If you can't grow a mustache because your face is going bald and decide to have a comb over instead using your nostril hair, that's unnecessary. You're putting yourself to a lot more effort than is necessary. Nobody is going around saying, oh, that fella can't grow a mustache anymore. He must be going bald on his face. Oh, they're not thinking that at all. Stop overthinking. We're thinking far too much. Stop thinking and just listen to this shit and you'll be far better. Your life will be all the better for it. Your life will be 10 times better than his now. Well, assuming your life isn't absolutely fantastic already, I shouldn't make promises like that. I shouldn't say, oh, your life's going to be 10 times better if you do this, because I don't know how good your life is at the moment. If your life is already 10 times better than the average, then I can't improve it in any way. Probably not anyway, I don't know. I think I'm improving my life today just by doing this. I've made myself laugh twice. Possibly because I've had too much caffeine, I don't know. Or I'm in a giddy mood. I'm improving my life listening to this. If it improves your life in some way, that's a bonus. Question is, how much of a bonus is it? What's the multiplier? It probably doesn't multiply your life. It's probably not making your life twice as good or three times as good. More likely it's improving your life by 0.034%. Or maybe it's improving your life by 10%. But only for the half hour or so that you're listening to it. After that, your life just goes back to normal. Maybe it's distracting you for a while from a terrible, terrible life. If that's the case, does that mean you derive no benefit from listening to this podcast unless your life is terrible? That's a bit depressing, I suppose, if you find a need and fill it. That's something for me to be satisfied about. But I'm not happy about the fact that your life is so shit that I can improve it. No, that's sad. I'm very sorry to hear life is like that. I hope it gets better soon, even though it's to my benefit that your life is shit, because it makes you listen to this. So I have a vested interest in your life continuing to be shit. Or do I? No, I don't. That's nonsense. I have a vested interest in your life improving as a result of my content. That will give me job satisfaction, I suppose you could call it, even though this isn't a job. This isn't a job. These podcasters like to come on all the time and say, this is my job. I do it for a living. I feed my kids. I've got 6 hungry mouths waiting to be fed while I say all this stuff to you. Send me money. No. I have hungry mouths, but I just put stuff in a bowl and they eat it. And then my wife gives them cream snacks and then we leave out some dry treats and then sometimes a bit of chicken. That's going to happen regardless of whether or not you listen to this. Maybe that's something for you to feel bad about. You're not filling my cat's mouth. Well, I don't think you should. It's not your responsibility. You didn't choose for me to have cats. In fact, if it was up to you, you'd probably choose for me not to have cats. There'd be one less thing for you to feel bad about when you listen to a free podcast. Does that make sense? It probably doesn't. Does anything make sense? Probably not. Not if you look at it like this anyway.